funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What can be done about the two steps up and one step back cycle that plagues many students when the school year is followed by a long summer break? Research shows that while children of middle-class families can actually make academic progress during a summer of enriching camps and family outings, many lower-income kids return to class behind where they were at the end of the previous school year. This summer, the city of Dallas is presenting a wide-ranging series of activities, events, and online educational recreation activities designed to keep these students engaged by creating opportunities for connected learning outside of traditional classroom settings. We have two guests here to talk about Dallas City of Learning. Gigi Antoni is CEO of the nonprofit organization Big Thought. Connie Yowell is an education researcher with the MacArthur Foundation. Dallas City of Learning events run through August 25th, and you can learn more at dallas.cityoflearning.org. Welcome both of you to Think.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Connie, what exactly is the summer slide?
What exactly is the summer slide?
Yes.
The summer slide is, I'd say, research in the last 5 years from the RAND Corporation and from a few other places. Really, we're looking at what happens to kids learning during the 3 or 4 months of summer. So if you specifically, for example, looked at their math and reading, what happens to kids, you know, by May, the end of their school year, have learned and grown to a particular degree, what happens when they come back in September? Are they at the same place that they were when they left school in May, or have they lost ground during the summer? And by and large, what research tells us is that kids, particularly low-income kids, can lose several months of learning by the time they get back to school in September. They can lose up to 2 months on reading comprehension. They can lose a couple of months on math. And in particular, for our low-income kids, we find more of a slide than for our middle-class kids.
And 2 months a year cumulatively can really add up by the time a student's in early high school.
Yes, it certainly can. It can have a huge impact for kids, and it has an effect that disaggregates across race and class. And so there have been wonderful programs like Big Thought that have stepped in to really begin to see, can we do something about that? Can we step in and make a difference and not only stop the slide, but actually increase learning that happens over the summer? And can we do it in a way that is not bound by some of the strictures of school, but can we do it in a way that is expansive, exciting, and innovative for kids during the summer?
So, Gigi, the idea was you didn't want to make it like summer school, because everybody dreads summer school, even if they need summer school.
Well, that's true, but I will say that part of what got us inspired to do this work in organizing the learning opportunities in the city for kids in Dallas was actually work that we've been doing for the last 4 years that Big Thought's been doing with RAND and the Wallace Foundation. That's part of a national demonstration program on how, through schools, we can curb summer learning loss for kids, and can we do it in a way where the gains are not just in one summer, but are cumulative, like the gaps are cumulative. And so we've been learning a lot here in Dallas about how summer learning loss can be remediated over the last 4 years as being a part of this national program. And the question we were asking ourselves was, well, how do we do this for kids in school, but also for kids that are just learning in the city in the summer? How do we create a system that can close the opportunity gaps between low and middle income kids in Dallas in the summer?
Connie, you have talked about the importance of making schools, visualizing schools as part of a broader educational ecosystem within any community. Can you explain what that means and how a community begins to build that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Part of our work at MacArthur, and I oversee a large $150 million portfolio in what we call digital media and learning. And part of what we've come to understand from large studies with young people, trying to understand how they learn both in school and out of school, is coming to the understanding both that school is an extraordinary site of learning for young people and that our cities are huge resources for informal learning, and that what we want to make transparent and as available as possible to all kids is the opportunity to learn wherever and whenever they can. And part of what is wonderful in the 21st century is that we have tools, digital media, that can help to connect these kinds of learning that can happen across a variety of contexts. And one of the things that we've been learning in our research work and from great organizations like Big Thought and others across the country is that in an approach that we call connected learning is that kids learn best when they bring together their social worlds, their friendship worlds, with the thing that they most want to get better at, what they're interested in, and are able to take those interests and then connect them to something meaningful in the world. Could be a career opportunity, could be an academic opportunity, could be making their community better. And so part of what we've been trying to do with our work is to find ways that allow those three things to be connected. And so that's part of the work that we've been wonderful to be a part of and to see beginning to take place in Dallas that we call Summer of Learning or City of Learning, which is using badges to begin to connect opportunities that occur within programs to be able to connect them through badges to opportunities that occur in other parts of the city.
Gigi, talk about the importance of those badges. It's not just about giving everybody a sticker for showing up. There's more to it than that.
Yeah, the badges are a way to sort of document the learning that's happening informally in the community. So in school, you get a grade, and you've got a syllabus, and you have a curriculum, and you check you've learned this or you haven't learned this. But with the badges, you can actually click on these badges once you've earned them, and you can take a look at exactly what the learning objectives were, the evidence of learning. So it is really, you have a digital backpack when you sign up, and you can collect badges in your backpack, and you can keep a record year over year. So next summer, you can add to your backpack, and you can level up and open more opportunities for yourself. But you also have a record of what it is that you've learned that you can share with your family, with your teachers, with your social network, or even on part of your college resume. A lot of our kids this summer will be doing internships, and that'll be recorded. A lot of our kids will be doing service hours that they'll need to graduate high school. So this is a way to be able to show what you've learned in more informal environments in the community.
Connie, when we talk about connected learning and pathways to learning, I have four kids in publicly funded schools, and I feel like their teachers are doing a great job. But how did we somehow get disconnected? How did we get to where school is siloed in one box and friendships are siloed in another box and maybe passion interests are siloed somewhere else?
It's really an interesting phenomenon, isn't it? I'm a parent of two. My kids are in middle school. And I think this is in part what I hope the badges can help open up. Schools are extraordinary places, and I think sometimes we get narrowed and siloed a little bit to get focused on what it is that we can measure and what it is that we can test. And we have to have those things. We have to figure out, accountability matters deeply, and we have to provide feedback on learning. But part of what we want to have happen with the badges and what I think is quite possible is that we want to create more pathways for more kids to opportunities for success. And we know that there are just so many rich resources in our cities and that we can create alternative ways of looking at evidence, alternative ways of showing what kids can do and what they have learned. And so the badges become ways of making that learning transparent and visible and of connecting one learning opportunity to another. I'm an old education history professor, actually. And when our educational system was created, our founding fathers really thought that it was the entire community's responsibility to provide education and learning for our kids. And I think in many respects, we now have the tools and the opportunities to go back to our original model and really have it be the entire city and the entire community that's responsible. And with the badges and the kinds of work that's being done, we have ways to make what's being learned more transparent and more visible.
What did it take, Gigi, to pull together community partners so that among the things that are offered this summer, coding and games, community action, designing and making, exploring earth and science, media, numbers, performance, sports, storytelling, zoology, it's like anything a kid could be interested in is represented here.
Well, you know, we have all that in our community. We really have amazing opportunities for kids. But what we find at Big Thought is that there are real barriers, particularly with our low-income kids, to accessing that learning. And what our parents tell us is that part of it is just getting the information and knowing what's going on, when it's going on, and where it's going on. But then there are other barriers, too. So the way that Dallas City of Learning is designed, we have 8 city departments that are a part of this that have big infrastructure and a lot of parks and rec, libraries, our municipal courts are opening up to kids, our police and fire are involved, our aviation division is involved. We're going to have a big turn up in July at Love Field. This can be all opened up for kids to learn what goes on at an airport. Trinity Watershed Management, Office of Cultural Affairs. So we have all the city infrastructure, and then we have these great organizations like the DMA and the Zoo and the Trammell Crow, and we've got these great programs. And then we have 20 neighborhood partners that are partnering with us. So these are places in neighborhoods where kids live and are already together. And then we're connecting all of that to our corporations, Southwest Airlines, AT&T, Lockheed Martin, Bank of America. They're all a part of making those connections. So one of the things that I love about the badges is that you might have an experience, say, at the zoo, because you're interested in zoology. You click on that and you find that. But there are many, many other supporting experiences in the city that can help you go deeper and connect. With the badges, you're able to see how what you're interested in is connected across many different agencies and providers and neighborhoods. And so it gives kids a pathway or builds a pathway that kids can take to learn more, get better, master, and go deeper in their learning. So if you think of a curriculum, which everything's all right there for you, this way you're making your own pathway through the community, through being able to earn these badges and sort of level up and go deeper and learn more.
And I would imagine, Connie, that kind of autonomy or sense of autonomy is really appealing to kids who maybe feel like the rest of the year they are told where to go and where to be.
All of our research tells us that it's hugely motivating and it's hugely engaging for young people and for kids to be able to, as Gigi just mentioned, to begin to explore their interests, and as they're exploring their interests, to have other opportunities unlock or open up for them as they're getting better at the thing that they care to be getting better at, and that they can be doing it with a friend or with a peer, is exactly the way that we have always known that the best learning happens, and the most engaging and motivating learning can happen. And so these become structures that create supports for that and do it with, as Gigi just laid out, some of the extraordinary resources and opportunities that Dallas has available.
Connie Yowell is an education researcher with the MacArthur Foundation. Gigi Antoni is CEO of the nonprofit organization Big Thought. We're talking about Dallas City of Learning. Events run through August 25th. You can learn more at dallas.cityoflearning.org. If you'd like to join our conversation, call in. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about the summer's Dallas City of Learning events, which run through August 25th in locations all over the city and also online, with Connie Yowell, who is an education researcher with the MacArthur Foundation, and with the CEO of Big Thought, Gigi Antoni. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Gigi, I know you mentioned that there are places around the city and neighborhood centers and parks and libraries. Transportation is a big issue for a lot of low-income kids whose parents may not have cars to even get themselves to work, let alone get their kids to different activities.
Right. And so that's where our neighborhood partners come in. And when you go on the site, you can search by neighborhood. So you can actually look at what's close to you, what that you can get to and connect to. So part of what's happening with Dallas City of Learning, not only are kids getting connected to things in their neighborhood, but we're also bringing in partners from other places into neighborhoods that maybe don't have as much going on. So one of the wonderful things about this pilot summer is we're going to learn a lot about where we need to be as a community putting more experiences for kids on the ground in their neighborhoods, because you're absolutely right. Transportation is probably even more of a barrier than a financial barrier for kids is a transportation barrier. So it is something that by design we are trying to learn more about so that we can get better and better at fixing it.
Connie, talk a little bit about the importance of having an online component. Sometimes people as old as I, you know, worry that kids are already spending too much time online. But this is, I guess this is where these kids are living anyway, right? And so putting something online is going to immediately seem legitimate to them.
Oh, I think it's hugely important for a couple of reasons. One is it is where a lot of the kids are living and spending a lot of time. But beyond that, we have funded a fair number of studies. We funded the largest ethnographic, and an ethnographic study is a study not where people take surveys, but rather where researchers go out and spend hours at a time sitting, observing, watching, paying attention to what people are doing. So we funded, at MacArthur, we funded a three-year study of over 700 young people to try to understand what they do with digital media, how they participate with it, because we wanted to get past the question of, well, how many hours a day are you using digital media, more to the question of, well, what are you doing during those hours? And one of the things we learned that has been so important in our continuing work is that there are really two big ways that kids participate with digital media. One is that they are, as we all know, they are very social, whether it's on Facebook. 99% of all kids, and our surveys do tell us this, that 99% of all kids, whether it's through mobile or online, are in social media, in friendship conversations, consuming. They're involved in pop culture and doing the things that we know that they do. There's another 20% that are online using digital tools to make and create and to participate in the kinds of forums that are available online to really pursue your interests, whether it's in chess, whether it's in science, whether it's in a thing we call fan fiction, which is really about writing. And that's where we see extraordinary learning happening, and that's where we believe the pursuit of interest happens. But that the fact that it's only about 20% of our young people that are in those interest kinds of experiences tells us that there's actually a participation gap more than an access gap when it comes to technology. And so part of what we see also coming out of the Cities of Learning experience is really an opportunity for young people to move from just spending time online in social, but connecting that social to enabling kids to pursue their interests and to become makers and creators through the use of digital media in combination with learning experiences. So that's part of what makes this so important.
So we have an email here from Howard who says, as I listen today, I feel I'm hearing a lot of generalities. Can we hear about some of the exact experiences students might have to do in order to earn a badge?
I'm sure. There are different kinds of badges that you can earn. You can earn a community badge. So yesterday, we had our first turn up, which is a public event that is open to anyone.
So you can turn up
wherever
this is happening.
You can just turn up wherever this is happening. They're going to be happening all summer long. And you can earn a turn up badge. And so a turn up badge is about participating in a community event. And so in order to get that badge, you come and you participate. You create a piece of art. You learned something on the technology bus. You participate in activities, but you can get a knowledge and skills badge, which might take you more. You might go online and you might create a story and have a friend edit it. So there are different levels of effort and learning, and different kinds of badges that you can learn online.
And having a friend edit, that goes back, Connie, to the idea of this being a social activity.
Yes, very much. And in addition to badging the local activities, part of the Cities of Learning, there are more than 80 curated online experiences for young people. So code.org, which is an online opportunity to learn how to code, has a whole set of badge programs that young people can go on, sign up for code.org, and begin to learn the skills for learning how to code. Scratch is another program that's online where young people learn how to code and then learn game design. That's also online, and those are a set of skills that young people can learn.
You could also earn a variety of badges. Dallas Independent School District, their summer camps are opening in 2 weeks, and some of those experiences you'll be able to earn a badge. Or you could be in a summer camp at your church and earn a badge in the neighborhood. Or you can go to the library and work with a librarian to get a set of books that you read and earn badges for that too. So there are many, many. You could do a community service project and do service learning and get a service learning badge. So there are literally over 1,000 options on the website of things that kids can go on and do. And they are organized by designing and making, zoology, numbers, coding. I mean, there are just many, many experiences.
It sounds like the hidden spine to all of these connected learning opportunities and pathways to learning is that what you're actually doing is also helping kids learn to seek their own interests and find their own information.
I think so. I think that's one of the most powerful things about this idea is that kids can learn about what they're passionate about. And I see this as one of the big opportunity gaps that exist for kids in our community between middle and upper income families with some discretionary time and income to help kids pursue something they're interested in, and our lower income kids who don't have as much access to their own sort of desire to pursue a passion. And I think that's very important and a really big problem that's worth working on is to close that gap as best we can.
Connie, how important is it that parents let kids decide what their passions are, so that if a kid really wants to be engaging with learning how to code video games and mom and dad think it's more important to, whatever, practice the saxophone during the summer, that we give kids a little bit of freedom to go with what interests them?
Yeah, you're asking both a researcher and a foundation person and a mom.
Right. I'm so glad that I've got you on the phone.
So you know, for all parents, I think it is our job to hold our kids accountable to their commitments that they make and to follow through on those things. Having said that, what I would also say is that one of the things particularly that we have found in our research is that particularly at the middle school, once kids hit that sort of 10 to 11 age and up, they get fewer and fewer opportunities to mess around and fewer opportunities to just play and figure out what it is they're interested in. That we immediately, we meaning parents, we meaning the way that we have traditionally organized our programs, move kids quickly into a declared interest. It could be STEM, it could be a variety of things in which they're expected to get to move into getting good quickly. And so part of the opportunity of seeing all of these possibilities laid out and knowing that you can choose a couple, you can earn a badge here, you can earn a participation badge there, and part of what's important to understand in the age of data is that these badges, one badge can recommend another badge, so that if I participate in a digital storytelling workshop, or if I go to one of the events that Dallas is holding and I mess around at an all-day event and there's something there that really grabbed my attention and I earned a participation badge, the site will then recommend for me a badge related to that interest, and I can go and further explore it. And so part of what happens in early adolescence and adolescence is identity development. And it's really important for kids to have the freedom to explore and to mess around and to sort of get a sense of what they're interested in and to be able to explore for a while and then maybe move on to another interest, all the while sort of taking a little bit from each of those to figure out what ultimately is their passion.
How important, or what's the relationship, Gigi, between exploring all these different fields and then students as they get old enough to maybe be close enough to having their first part-time job?
So this is our pilot summer this summer, and so we have an amazing group of 50 partners that are working with us, and they range across many disciplines and age ranges. So when we get up into the high school offerings and you may be able to connect to an internship or a volunteer opportunity and our partners in universities are also helping us find opportunities for kids to begin to explore, what goes on, for instance, on July 12th at La Field. We'll be able to see the careers that are offered in a very behind the scenes kind of way. So what are all the jobs at La Field that happen
more
in
than
an
just
airport?
Pilot, right?
Yeah, more than just pilot. How do the planes get up and down, and what do the mechanics do, and how does the baggage get handled, and how do the tickets get issued, and will our police and fire have a big part of what goes on at the airport, and having a chance for kids to meet people who do these jobs, talk to them about their path and how they chose it and what happened. So on both a messing around, getting to go to the airport and see all of the options there, all the way to formal internships that are badged, City of Learning can offer a lot of connections across all of those.
Any concerns at all, Gigi and Tony, that as great as this sounds, it will be inundated by hyper-educated parents who want the best for their kids and have the resources maybe to send them somewhere else and sort of push out of the way kids who wouldn't otherwise be able to engage this way?
Well, that is, Big Thought focuses almost exclusively. We build programs that are great for all kids, but we really focus on making sure that there aren't barriers to access for kids who. So most of the activities that are offered on the site are free. They are organized by neighborhood. And then we have our neighborhood partners on the ground that are helping, they know the kids in the neighborhood. And so they're helping make sure that kids are connected. So we saw all kinds of folks yesterday on the bridge.
Tell us about what happened there.
Yesterday was really our first experience having a turn up. And so we had art activities. We had the Perot Museum was there doing experiments with wind and engineering. We had puppets that were talking about storytelling. So we had a lot of the strands. We had technology. We had a technology bus there where kids could go on and sign up and get connected. So that's just one example, but that's what happened at the bridge, and we saw lots of kids that were so a combination that came from lots of places in our city. So a combination of having neighborhood partners, having city partners, you know, for us, this would this whole thing would be a big failure if that's what happened. And so we've made really sure that we're focusing on all the kids in the community.
Connie, how important is it that programs like these be integrated with or take into account school curricula? Does that matter very much as long as they're learning something that is of value to them and inspires them?
So I would say that both are important. So we, from the MacArthur side, our long-term aspirations are that in building out an ecosystem for learning, that we're building out all of the connections. So on the one end, we want to make sure that where connections can be made, that when kids are learning and there are pathways, as Gigi has been talking about, that we can make those connections to internships and to careers and also possibly to higher education. We've had some universities begin to have conversations about the possibility of accepting badges as part of admissions. On the other end, there we've begun conversations with school districts to talk about whether or not badges can also then count, regardless of where they're earned, whether or not they can be counted for school credit on particular subjects or related to particular content areas, so that we're building out a whole learning ecosystem that is connected.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go on the phone now to Kwaku in Duncanville. Hi, Kwaku.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. I want to say hi to Gigi. This is Kwaku Covington calling you.
Oh, hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. My question is, do you have any outlet for children interested in music, guitar or flute?
We do. We have in our cultural centers in particular, we have opportunities for kids to learn in the summer through the Office of Cultural Affairs, music, drumming, guitar, lots of things going on in that respect in those places. And we have the Wind Symphony is doing a great summer camp. We've got we have lots of options.
We're speaking this hour with Gigi Antonio, CEO of Big Thought, and Connie Yowell, education researcher with the MacArthur Foundation, about Dallas City of Learning. Events run all over the city through August 25th. You can learn more at dallas.cityoflearning.org. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about Dallas City of Learning with Gigi Antoni, who is CEO of the nonprofit organization Big Thought, and Connie Yowell, who is an education researcher with the nonprofit organization, the MacArthur Foundation. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Connie, what does research suggest about ways, I mean, how do you take similar curricula and make them work for, say, a 7-year-old and make them work for a 17-year-old? How many different iterations of everything should there be?
That's an excellent question. I'm not sure when we're talking about a curriculum for a 7-year-old and a 17-year-old, I'm not sure we want necessarily to make them the same.
Mm-hmm.
I think we want to think about the broad design principles in terms of engaging them in similar ways. And I think that we can certainly go after deeper topics, obviously, with the 17-year-old than the 7-year-old. But I think we do want to think much more deeply in terms of how we're going to engage the 17-year-old and what we're going to ask of the 17-year-old. When we think about curriculum, we think about it very much in a participatory way. And so we want to think quite deeply about what it is in that curriculum that a 17-year-old is going to be making and creating, mm-hmm. and what they're going to be producing as they're going deep into content knowledge as well. The 7-year-old, it may be a slightly different kind of engagement that we're talking about. So I actually think that from a developmental perspective, we want to be thinking hard about what those look like. I would actually suggest that we may not be using the same curriculum for a 7-year-old and a 17-year-old.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And when we look at what our city partners have developed for kids, there's a lot of thought that's put into, you know, the difference between being in an early childhood program, being an upper elementary, middle, or high school. I think those are some pretty clear divisions. And our partners are, you know, excellent in the city at designing some of the nation's best experiences for kids. And they are, and you can search on the website by age appropriateness.
There's a lot of really great corporate philanthropy in this community. Did you have to lay down the law? Did the program have to lay down the law at all, Gigi, with corporate partners and say, this is not just a PR opportunity where you give out a ruler? Or was everybody kind of on board, and did they understand what you were trying to achieve?
I think that our corporate community is very sophisticated when they think about how to make a difference in a kid's life, and are so open and so and really searching for opportunities to dig in with kids in the community around education. And I think a lot of that is because of the great work our mayor has done and our superintendent, and the whole conversation that's going on in Dallas right now about how we can support our kids learning all year long in all sorts of places all over the city. So I did. That was not, you know,
not a problem.
That was not a problem. I think the conversations were, how can we design something that's going to be meaningful? How can we participate in a meaningful way? And how can we partner together to do that? So it was really a joy, in fact, talking with our wonderful corporate partners in this community. They are incredibly generous, and they do things all year long to connect kids to learning. This was just a way to organize and connect that in some new ways.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Mike in Dallas. Hello, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Actually, one comment and one question. First comment, the badge thing sounds really cool. Actually reminds me a lot of Scouts. My son's a Scout, mm-hmm. and I know he's been collecting quite a bit of his merit badges over the past couple of years instead of the Eagle and out here shortly. So learns a lot through doing the merit badge, but sounds kind of along those same lines. But really the question I had for y'all was, recently I visited a town out in West Texas called Roscoe. They have an independent collegiate high school there. What's interesting is that every senior graduates with an associate's degree that's accredited through universities. I mean, they actually fly the UT flag, the A&M flag. I mean, you graduate from that school and you can enter in as basically a junior. Mm-hmm. You've already completed 2 years of college. Now, it's not an AP school. This is a regular public high school, and the kids begin their study in freshman year and work towards that goal. Everyone graduates with an associate's degree, which is amazing to me. Now, the question I have is, why can't we all do that? I mean, these kids are not gifted or anything, just regular good old kids, right? And this is not a very rich town, actually, quite frankly. It's a little bit on the poor side.
Well, good question, Mike. It may take us a little off topic for today, but certainly I guess the idea, if we want to save kids from the summer slide, is that maybe more and more kids will be in a position to really hit the ground running once they get to college.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are actually high schools programs here in our public school district that basically do the same thing. So that does exist here in Dallas, maybe not in a one high school, but that is, there is a track in DIST where kids can earn an associate degree and their high school diploma at the same time. But I think that, you know, this is our pilot year with City of Learning. Next summer, we will be able to offer much more And involve many, many more children next summer. And once it comes up next summer, it will go year-round. And I think that this one of the things, you know, when I think 5 or 10 years from now, what this idea of badging could be for kids in the community is that you could, in fact, earn credits and be able to be in a position to get college credit or to get high school credit or to get school credit for learning in the real world, right, in the community in different ways. I think it's going to be interesting to see now that we have this infrastructure in the city, how we might all as a community find ways to connect it and help prepare kids for secondary education, you know, after high school.
So I guess there is city funding, there's philanthropic funding, there is maybe some like corporate money that's going into this. I wonder, Connie Yowell, if you can talk about how the spending for programs like these might compare with what school districts put out there just trying to get kids caught up after a summer in which they have lost ground.
Yeah, I think we need to be careful in terms of how we think about the spending for programs when you say programs like this. So the Cities of Learning is is an infrastructure that is supplemental in the sense that it's being placed to connect existing extraordinary programs. So Dallas has a wealth of programs on the ground that are being connected through technology infrastructure and being made transparent and visible. So there's a fair amount of infrastructure. There's a fair amount of cost already in those programs, and so I wouldn't want to suggest that there isn't an important cost to the running of the set of informal programs that are being connected, because those are incredibly important programs, and we want to make sure that we're identifying how important those programs are, and what the badges are doing is simply connecting them. And so it's an important infrastructure that is just that. It's an infrastructure that's connecting extraordinary programs that currently exist. What I would then say is that I do think that state government, city government, school districts do spend considerable amount of money doing remediation to try to catch up on summer loss, as well as other kinds of remediation that I think robust summer programs like the ones that are being run in Dallas and are now being connected, and hopefully the Cities of Learning is providing greater access to more kids to both through the pilot, but certainly in the coming years as it grows, will have a huge impact and both relieve some of the burden that will come to the schools later, but also more importantly will provide the kids of Dallas both extraordinary summers, but also accelerate their learning.
Gigi, there may be parents out there who want the best for their kids, but who also spend a lot of time like in front of the TV over the summer when their parents were at work all day, who may say, well, I didn't really need all that. Can you talk a little bit about what research has shown and what you've seen in your own experience that is the benefit of keeping kids busy throughout the summer as opposed to having completely unstructured time?
Yeah, it's just not debatable. There is just no question that kids that are active and learning after school and in the summer, I'm just talking generally about out of school time, how unbelievably important that time is. You know, kids, the National Alliance for After School has just published a interesting study that has found that kids in, you know, compared to middle income and lower income kids have as much as 6,000 hours less of instructional hours that are happening in out of school time, being read to, going to museums, having experiences in your community, than middle and upper income kids. And attendance, grades, and matriculation are all helped by informal learning outside of school. And, you know, when we look at our own work and in our own city, the availability of that kind of learning varies greatly from neighborhood to neighborhood and from, you know, and in socioeconomic. I mean, it's really, you know, you really look at our school system and you look at the kids. You know, our mayor talks a lot about kids who have not. You know, it's about an opportunity gap. It's not about, you know, an ability to learn, of course. And so, you know, all of the things that we can do, getting kids up, out and learning, whether you're, if your child is qualifies to go to DISD's excellent summer camps, do that. If you have, if you're involved in a church that has a great program in the summer for kids, do that. And, you know, go to the museum, go to the Trinity Bridge, get involved in your community, get kids out and learning, because there's no question that it's an important element to success in school.
We have an email here from Edward in Richardson who wants to know if City of Learning has a similar program for adults. He says, the reason I ask is twofold, addressing the generation gap and adult-kid family interaction in order to complete the badges.
Many, many of the experiences online are available for families. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's what we're doing in my family. I signed up for City of Learning this weekend. So I have my own backpack and I'm out with my kid and we're having a great time as a family. And that's really what it's designed to help.
Connie, as cities around the country are looking at programs like this, can you talk about some of the early lessons learned and best practices?
Sure. So just as background, Cities of Learning started as a pilot Summer of Learning project in Chicago last summer. There was just one city doing it. And Dallas stepped in, and Dallas and L.A. and Pittsburgh are the other three that are going this summer. So this is really just the second summer that we're doing it. And I do want to say that Dallas has been phenomenal. Mayor Rawlings and Gigi and Big Thought and the number of programs that are starting up are just, it's just been phenomenal to watch them step in and grab the bull by the horns and put this thing together. I would say that the first lesson learned is exactly what Dallas is doing, which is to pilot and not start with a full set and to believe that you can do the whole city and the whole thing all at once. I think that is an impossible thing to do. So the first thing is to pilot. The second thing is to really make sure that we're reaching out to parents in particular to explain what the program is and to make sure that there's a very strong communications message about what are the possibilities and what are the opportunities. And then I think the third thing is to really – sometimes people wonder what the badges are all about. And so I think having the badges connect to something and to make sure that there's follow-up on the badges has also been hugely important. But more than anything, and Dallas has done this exceptionally well, is how beautiful and effective and robust the site is and how many offerings there are from the get-go, and to have the kinds of events like the event they had just this past week as a way to bring the community together around the idea are all parts of best practices that I think are just a terrific way to start the work.
Connie Yowell is an education researcher with the MacArthur Foundation. Gigi Antoni is CEO of Big Thought. Dallas City of Learning events run through August 25th. You can find more information online. Thank you both so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer with help on the phones today from Christina Alsh. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and you can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.